Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob, and today we have a special show because for the first part of the show, I have an interview, and today it is a phone interview with Mark Green, original member of The Moments. So first of all, Mark, can you hear me?
I can hear you, the original lead singer of The Moments.
Okay, original lead singer of The Moments, and that's even before Ray Goodman and Brown joined the group, right?
Absolutely.
So today we will be talking about the origin of The Moments and playing their records and going through the history of all the stuff that Mark has done in his career. So it should be an interesting show. I usually interview Chicago groups, but I thought Mark had a really interesting story and it would be cool to have him on. So thanks so much, Mark, for coming on.
It's my pleasure.
So first of all, can you talk about where The Moments are originally from?
The original Moments are from Washington, D.C. Actually, that's Richard Gross, John Morgan, both of them, the late Eric Ulfus, and the late John Morgan.
Okay. And so originally there were three members in the group?
There were four. There was Eric Ulfus, John Morgan, myself, Mark Green, and Richard Gross.
Okay, so how did the group form, and what part of D.C. are you guys from?
Let's see, Anacostia. Anacostia is like where it's in the suburbs, in between the, and you might laugh at this, in between St. Elizabeth and the cemetery.
Okay.
And, but there's a lot of land out there. I guess years ago they had a lot of stock out there, and they raised and planted grew a lot of stuff, and horses, and there was a military highway that led to Andrews Air Force Base, and of course there was South Capitol Street that led straight to Bowling Air Force Base, and it was a very beautiful landscape out there. There was a great deal of talent. Of course, Billy Stewart, I don't know if you remember him.
Well, my show is named after Billy Stewart.
Oh, that's right, Sitting in the Park. And he was very close to Marvin Gaye, and there was John Thompson, who I went to school with, from the big basketball coach here from, Georgetown.
Okay.
And he's a pro ball player, but nevertheless, I started with the group called The Varios. I was like 16 years old. We won a talent show at the Strand Theater in Northeast Washington. Then following that, I sang with another group. One break up, the other one get together. The other one was the Congressionals. And we had a deal and a recorded with this guy named Scott Goings. I don't know if you remember him, but I do. And that's enough, I guess.
The Varios group that you were in, there was a Varios that cut a record on Amy Records in 1962. That's not the group you weren't in that Varios group, were you?
1962.
They cut a record called Operator, Operator.
No. By that time, I had joined the, I was very young, and I joined the group, the Congressionals.
Okay, did the Congressionals, you said you work with that Scott Goings guy?
Scott Goings had a record store there in Southeast Washington in Shipley Terrace, and he said, hey, let me hear what you guys sound like, and we cut a song that's titled, I'm Going to Leave This Town.
So it was released on a 45?
It was on a 45. No release because I think one of the guy's father was kind of shaky about the contract, and we wanted to go, and it didn't happen. So there we went to New York and didn't have the contact that we really wanted. Came back to D.C., and I began to sing more with the Congressionals, and I met up with three guys. They called themselves The Moments.
Okay, so they already had the name, and they were already singing together, the three guys.
Yeah, the three of them, John, Richard, and Eric.
Okay, where did
they were with this guy, Freddie Perren, and the Mizell brothers were working with them.
Okay, yeah, and I know Freddie Perren did a lot of stuff. I know he was famous for being a producer, like a part of the corporation at Motown later.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because I listened to some of those pieces that that they recorded on Hog Label, which was right here in Washington, and their production sounded a little like theirs from Motown.
Okay, so you just mentioned the Moments cut a record on the Hog Label called...
Hog Label, yes.
And it was called Baby, I Want You and Pray For Me. So are you on that record?
I am not on that record.
Okay, what's the story? Who sings on that record?
That's the late Eric Olfus. He's singing Pray For Me and on Baby, I Want You. Is John Morgan, who's opening up, and then Eric comes in and sings, and the guy with the low voice that sings, "Oh, my baby, my baby." That's Richard.
Okay.
And I just talked to him today, by the way. I told him about the good stuff that we had, that happened with between us.
Okay.
And, so that record was not really released that they know of. I talked to Richard, he said, "I didn't know they released that." I found out, you know, through the grapevine from someone who knew and heard about it. I think the gentleman you talked to from Raleigh, North Carolina.
I'm not sure who you're talking about, actually. But you're talking about the DJ.
You're right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he had told me about it, and I was surprised. So I told Richard about it, of the Living Original Moments. And he was surprised. So then I met you.
Okay.
And then the story begins. So when I joined the Moments, it was in late 1966 into 67.
Okay.
I met them at the studio when they had just finished cutting this record, that single, Pray For Me. And Baby, I Want You.
Do you remember what studio it was?
It was here in downtown Washington, between 14th and Vermont Avenue. I'm trying to think of the name of
it. Was it the Edgewood Studio?
Edgewood, exactly.
Yeah, I know the Mizell brothers were interviewed about the single, and they talked about recording it at Edgewood.
Exactly. Studios. Edgewood was a popular studio in Washington, D.C. and Northwest. I did get a chance to meet Freddie Perren and, one of the Mizell brothers, and I left from there, and a month or two went by, and I was singing with Herb from Peaches and Herb. You remember him, I know.
Yeah.
Herbert Feimster is his name, but Herb and I, we had a group, we were working and doing things, and then I met up again with the Moments, and they said, "Hey, man, you know, we need your voice. Somebody's looking for the sound that you have. Let's get together." So we got together. It was four of us. Had a tremendous sound, some harmonies that they produced because they were all lead singers. And I knew a lot about pop harmony and modern pop harmony, like the Freshmen, the Four Aces and different things, because my family, my grandmother was a music major out of Howard University, pianist. And my father had a voice, and he could play piano.
Okay.
And I said, "Gee whiz." But coming from a family of 11, he had to work.
Okay.
He was, my father was very, I should say, talented. He was a bookbinder along with architectural drawing. But he worked jobs, you know, and took care of us in the house. And we would have contests in the house. There was the five girls, and I mean, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 girls and 5 boys. And can you imagine? We had a chorus at home.
So you got into singing from an early age, you're saying? You were singing with all your family members?
Absolutely. But, you know, for my introduction to music and sound was listening to, believe it or not, the sounds of birds and the jazz that my father was playing, you know, from Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald and Nat Cole and Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett. My father had versatility with him in his ears, and he could whistle like he could play a saxophone or a flute. But the Moments, again, we got to deal with to go up to Jersey, in Teaneck, New Jersey, to meet Ed Townsend.
Well, before we talk about how you got, when you went to New Jersey, can I play the Hog record so people know what we're talking about?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you already described who's singing what parts on the record, and it's a nice cut, and like you said, it never really got released officially. It was just kind of pressed up. So I will play the record, and we could talk some more. This is The Moments with their very first record. This track is called Baby, I Want You. Okay, that was just the very first record released by The Moments, who eventually, through completely changed membership, changed, became like the lineup changed into the Stang group. But that, so singing lead on there was, again, Mark, who was singing on the...
John Morgan, the first lead. The second lead was Eric Ulfus. And then with the low part, Richard Gross with the baby, baby.
Okay. So you were saying that you met those guys right after they recorded that record.
Right after they recorded it, exactly.
And you, before I played that song, I cut you off. You had just started to talk about going to New Jersey. Were you looking for a record deal? What were you doing?
Right. The three guys came to me in my area and solicited me and said, "Listen, man, we got a deal. We're looking for your voice." We got together and had a meeting, and the following week, we were headed to Teaneck, New Jersey, where we met a legend by the name of Ed Townsend, who recorded us a few things, especially the song For Your Love.
Okay.
And he had listened to us. He plays piano as well. And he called Sylvia Robinson from the Mickey and Sylvia Sound Love is Strange. I guess you probably know about that. He also did Pillow Talk.
Sure.
And she and her husband came over, and they listened, and they were starting a business up in the music, their company, All Platinum, right there on Palisades in Jersey. And we were constantly running from Washington to New Jersey. And we recorded, one of the first songs we recorded, it was, believe it or not, My Confessions of Love.
Okay.
And then we went to the studio that they had after they finished it up and quickly and recorded Not on the Outside. But, you know, an interesting story about that, because Billy Brown, who was of the Reagan and Brown group, or the second set of Moments, was due to sing Not on the Outside, but she didn't lean toward his voice at that time. He was with the group The Broadways. So she liked the Moments. We did it.
So
and Not on the Outside took off. Great 45 R&B, sold over a quarter of a million, and 57, 58 in the charts, in the pop charts.
So you're saying that she was going to record it with Billy Brown, but not as part of the Moments, as like a solo artist or something like that? And then she recorded with the Moments instead.
Right. I don't know if she was going to use the Broadway or not, but
okay.
Something happened. And so then we recorded it, and it took off.
So
and it was doing great. You know, number one is an R&B piece there. And then, like I said, 57, 58 on the pop charts. But we did 9 days at the Apollo Theater, and that's when the group sort of disintegrated, in a sense, because there was some business problems with the company.
Okay.
Which happens, you've heard historical tales concerning those things that do take place. Somebody didn't get paid.
Okay.
Nobody leaves the show.
So you're saying you didn't get paid for the Apollo Theater engagement,
oh,
you're saying?
God, it was horrible, you know.
So you were doing Not on the Outside at the Apollo Theater?
The headline show. We did R.K.O. Bushwick, R.K.O. Proctor. We did Upbeat in Cleveland and, what is it, Come Alive in Pittsburgh, both national shows. And
do you remember what years you were on those TV shows?
These were in 1968.
Okay.
In the fall of the year, I'll never forget that, because we caught heck getting up to the top of the hill in Pittsburgh to Channel 11, the live show that they have titled Come Alive.
Okay.
Because then in Cleveland, we were on Upbeat with Edwin Starr, and the OJs were on that show as well. But at in Pittsburgh, it was a little different. Had more of a different kind of show, but we were there. I mean, when I say a different kind of show, there were other people that weren't of so-called, quote-unquote, R&B, but they were more like pop R&B.
Okay.
Back to the Apollo, what happened at the Apollo, the 9 days at the Apollo, Michael and Marlon Jackson were opening up the show. They were young kids, but they were dancing and singing, you know, and it was Sam and Dave, Margie Hendrix from the Raelettes, and there was the Unifix, a group that you might know about.
And they were from D.C. also.
From D.C., yes. They could step and sing. Al Johnson lead singing. And they also had Clarence Carter doing a song called Patches.
Okay.
And you remember that song?
Yeah, I know Patches.
It was a great 9 days, but miserable on one hand, because it was freezing in New York. You know, 9 days before New Year's, we had the show. Headline, 9 days at the Apollo Theater. Somebody stole our battery out the car. It was so cold. It was so cold. The guy came back around the corner and sold it back to us. We bought it. We had to have it. So we know he was on stuff. So nevertheless, we left from there mad. Because we didn't get what we supposed to have got money-wise for the 9 days, but we stuck it out. And that's when the group sort of broke up. John Morgan stayed with, this is where the replacement came down. Billy Brown was brought in, and Al Goodman was brought in. John Morgan stayed. There was some friction in the group at the moment. I don't know what happened, but they were...
So pretty much the group kind of disbanded over what happened with the show and not getting paid and stuff.
Yeah, it was okay. All because of the people who handled us, that's it, All Platinum Group. And following that,
Was Freddie Perren still your manager, or was it? Did that change?
Well, Joe and Sylvia Robinson were handling us as manager and booking to get this thing really going. The sad part about it is that when the group broke up, you know, it had a lot to do with them, and but they kept me on board and released the song "My Confessions of Love." While at the same time, the other group, whom she called the Moments, I mean, we still own the name, and she had put Billy Brown and Al Goodman together and Kevin with John and released a song called "Sunday."
Okay.
So Sunday was right after "Not on the Outside."
So did you know Billy Brown and Al Goodman before?
I didn't know Billy Brown, and Al Goodman was sort of like hanging around, and he was with some group, but I only seen him pretty much.
Okay. So
and then following that, they had a show at the Civic Center in Baltimore. While we were in the studio, she called us to the studio, me, John, and Eric to the studio, and we knew there was a show going on in Baltimore. This is how the business is. This is how people cared about, you know, the artists. And I experienced that. It was a very sad thing and a very hurtful thing. While they did that, and then they came here to Washington to do a show at the Howard Theater. And, of course, I had to step up to the plate and approach Mr. Robinson and... who played Gangster, but
so
it was a joke in D.C., but nevertheless.
So I'm confused, actually. You're saying that while you were doing a show, there was also another Moments doing a show? Is that what
at
you're saying?
At the Civic Center in Baltimore.
Okay, so they had put like Al Goodman and Billy Brown at the Civic Center as the Moments.
As the Moments with John Morgan.
Okay, and you guys were doing a show as the Moments, or you just were...
We were in the studio... being hostage, held as hostage, so that their minds would be pretty much at ease, that we wouldn't go over to Baltimore and be mistaken.
Okay.
Or surprised.
So they were like switching. They were switching out the members, like trying.
I mean, this was so hodgepodge and unbusinesslike, and for this to happen, and these were. People who, I mean, Sylvia had been in the business a long time, you know. I mean, no respect for human beings. If you don't like us, then get rid of all of us, you know. Don't take the name and run up the bill with someone else. And it was such a crude situation. No respect for what we brought to the table. And we spent a lot of time and money running back and forth with the Jersey. I mean, they weren't rich at that time. So we spent our money to get back and forth. They would keep us there and pay the bill for the hotel, but they had to do something because we weren't going to sleep in the car. So I mean, I had family. I was married at that time and had a few kids, you know. I said, you know, what are you going to do? So she wanted to keep me. She said, well, Mark, you don't need those guys. You got the most beautiful voice this side of heaven. Great. Pay me my royalties.
Okay, so her plan was to keep you as a solo artist.
Yeah, but so when they released this song, My Confessions of Love, then they wanted to put me with the group Ray Goodman and Brown, because they put Johnny out of the group and bought another guy named Johnny Moore. And so Johnny was back in D.C. and dissatisfied as well. And there was then Johnny Moore... and Goodman and Brown, so they got rid of Johnny Moore. I guess he couldn't hold the position.
Okay.
Then they got Harry Ray.
Okay.
This is when they were Ray Goodman and Brown. So she called me up again. I flew up and she said, "Why don't you join the group? Get with the guys, you know." I said, "Well, what are you gonna do with that other contract?" This is kind of crazy, but I won't get into that. Bottom line was that it was a financial dispute and it was a bad business dispute with us, you know, and they didn't pay. And I told Al and them, I said, "Y'all are not going to get paid either," because I didn't get paid. And she wanted me to join you all. I said, "You got to be crazy." I can't join you all because you're not going to get paid, and they didn't.
Well, let me play the...
It's a horrible story, isn't it?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's a very common story for people to get ripped off in the industry.
That is true.
Let me play the one solo record that they did release on you, which was My Confession of Love. And you're saying that singing back up on here were the other three original moments, is that right?
On My Confessions of Love, yes.
Okay, so this is Mark Green with My Confession of Love, and then we will talk some more.
All right.
Okay, that was just Mark Green with the one solo record released on Stang Records by him, My Confession of Love. And the flip of that is nice, too. The flip is called I'm So Lost. And if you're just tuning in, Mark is here on the phone right now talking about his career and his story with the Moments.
Here I am, yes.
So I guess, so ultimately you were talking about how they had sort of changed, like Sylvia had switched up the group, and she released that as a solo artist in you, and she was trying to get you to come back to the group, but pretty much contractual disputes, you didn't want to deal with it, so you kind of left her company, is that right?
Exactly. Even after they put out that, the Rapper's Delight, and they sold like $40 million on that, that was the take. When I saw Sylvia and in the 70s, after the Rapper's Delight, you know, Hotel Motel Holiday Inn, remember that?
Yeah.
And they had moved into this great mansion, you know, and they had 32 rooms in there and maids and butlers. I said, okay, well, I can get paid now.
Yeah, that, I don't think that's how
it works. No. Maybe I get another contract. Yes, but nothing from the, no residuals from the first one. So that was in that period when she wanted me to join the Reagan and Brown Cats, you know. Isn't that something? Here, you bring the Moments to them. Even if you just common law, they own the name. They say, okay, well, join them. They're the Moments now. Take over.
Yeah, I think when they had Ray Goodman and Brown, she even made a third Moments in the 80s with, like, totally different guys for a second.
Oh, she did?
I think so. I think she released like another, like on her label on Sugar Hill.
Hmm.
I think there was Ray Goodman Brown, and I think she like cut. I think so. I could be wrong, but I think.
Well, she cut Ray Goodman Brown off in '79. That's when he came up with the release with Polygram, Polyduo, Gotta Be a Special Lady. Remember that?
Yeah.
They were gone then, and then after Harry Ray died on the stage.
Well,
there.
Yeah, I wanted to get to the okay. the later stuff. But at first, I wanted to go and talk about what you did before that. So one question I had even before talking about that, though, is on all the records, you sing in a falsetto singing style. So I wanted to ask about how you got into sort of singing that style and how your group got harmonizing that style. Because on that first record we heard, they're singing high, but they're not exactly singing falsetto. But you're definitely singing falsetto on your records, right?
I'm singing part false and part natural.
Okay.
Because my voice was high, natural first tenor.
Okay.
And I did do some things that were in falsetto.
So how did you get into singing in that style?
I pretty much created it because I learned, well, I play alto, tenor, soprano, flute, and clarinet as well. And I listened to a lot of the other guys who were singing, and I learned harmony parts. And I said, gee whiz, I don't just have to sing in the first tenor parts and falsetto parts. I could sing the other ones, too. But in that period, there was Delphonics. There was, you know, guys that sang high, you know, like Stylistics. And this was the ongoing thing in that period, coming through the 60s.
Yeah, even the Unifix sang.
Unifix,
yeah.
But Al Johnson was basically, from the lead singer of the Unifix, was singing natural, you know. And his voice, he wasn't really a falsetto type guy.
Okay.
But the Blue Magic, Delphonics, Stylistics, Moments, Bloodstone, and probably a few others. Of course, you know, from Earth, Wind, and Fire, Philip Bailey sang that high falsetto.
But you were actually doing it before some of those groups you mentioned. Like, you were doing it before Bloodstone and
before
Earth, Wind, and Fire. So were you inspired by specific groups to do it, or you just kind of did it along, like, it was just sort of emerging as a style, and you kind of went along?
It's interesting you said it, because at the 48th and Broadway at Sylvia's Blue Morocco, I met Frankie Lyman before he died.
Okay.
And Frankie was begging for, Joey, hey, let me in, man. I'm clean, I'm straight. He said, I'm ready. So Joe was, you know, he wasn't certain with him. But listening to Lunathi and the Imperials, you know.
Okay.
Doing stuff just two kinds of people in the world. Frankie Lyman was my idol. I tell you honestly, I mean, this is who I listen to. I also listen to some other groups that sang in that high key, you know. But I listen to a lot of the Four Freshmans and the Lettermans and the Four Aces and groups like that as well. But the tenor thing was on in the 60s, especially in the period of coming through, in 68, we did that Not on the Outside. And I think, Blue Magic came after that or before? After that. Delphonics?
The Delphonics were coming out around 67, 68.
Right around my time, right.
Yeah.
And Stylistics?
I think their first record was 69. I'm not sure. So you were one of the early soul groups singing in that falsetto style.
Absolutely.
So we were just talking about how you had left Stang Records. And
right.
I think soon after that you ended up on Volt Records, Stax Volt.
Oh, yes.
And recorded as the leader. So could you talk about how that happened?
Well, after we couldn't stop, you know, and of course it takes money to go on the court and fight. I didn't own the name. The guys had the name before I did, and I said, hey, what are you going to do about it, you know? So they sort of checked a few things out concerning the name, and as you said, they were kind of gangster-like up there in Jersey. So we went on with got another guy named Donald Spriggs, and formed the group The Leaders, because everybody was lead singers. That's Eric, Richard Gross, Donald Spriggs, a new member, and myself.
So Donald replaced John Morgan.
Exactly.
So you guys came up with the name The Leaders.
The Leaders.
And then you were looking for a record contract?
Absolutely. And we were there at the 60 West 57 there with Myrna March, who's also a country and western singer. I don't know if she's still alive or not. and she had a lot of tunes in Bert Keys. And we had the song, Which Way, How Do You Move a Mountain, and Anyone Can. There was another tune that belonged to Murray as well, titled Making Love. Sissy Houston did that song, but I did another spin with a little arrangement, which is on that album as well. I think I sent you that.
Oh, yeah. I think Myrna and Bert produced the Sissy Houston version, too.
Yeah, they produced that, but they didn't produce this one that I did here.
So
it's on my label.
So where did you meet them again? I'm sorry. I think I missed
it. We met. Well, Bert knew the bad deal that we got, and he said, listen, meet me over at Myrna March's place here at 60 West 57, right across from La Martinique.
Is that in New Jersey?
That's New York, yeah.
Okay, New York.
Yes, 60 West 57. And lo and behold, she had a piano there, and we worked out some things, and another guy by the name of Al Bell, who was a radio DJ here, and was in DC DJ WST, he was connected with Stax Volt.
Okay.
At that time with Isaac Hayes, you know, and the Dramatics, and there were other groups that were there. And we recorded and had a nice write-up in the Star here in Washington, and something happened very strange. Somebody hijacked the truck.
Okay.
With Isaac's stuff on it as well, and but nevertheless, somebody got it, and we heard it on the radio. The song said, well, how did it get on the radio? This is the strangest thing, you know. And so it fizzled, and I think those tunes were great. We didn't get the push, and they maybe were ahead of time, or we were caught in the mix of something that was in the transition. But those are good tunes. Anyone Can, How Do You Move a Mountain, Which Way was maybe a B, I would say.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Those are great records. So they got released, I think, around 1973 on Volt Records. So you're saying you actually recorded them in New York, is that right?
49th in Broadway. Was it old Columbia Studio? We recorded there with big cats like Richard T. and his brother and a nice string orchestration. And we recorded, we were all happy, ready to roll again, and something happened.
Well, let me play Anyone Can, because it's a great record, and then
yes,
we can talk more about what happened after that. So this is The Leaders with Anyone Can. Okay, that was just The Leaders with Anyone Can. And if you're just tuning in, I have on the phone Mark Green, original member of The Moments and a member of The Leaders, who are just The Moments with one singer replaced. So that record came out, I think, around 1973. And it was an excellent cut, and the follow-up, Which Way, was a good record also. And, Mark, you were saying that just weird stuff happened with the contract there, too, and...
Not so much of the contract itself. Again, there was a contract, but we never really found out the true release date on it, or how much was sold on it, or where it went. The information that I got this millennium is was based on a gentleman who was a DJ and yourself.
Okay.
Then, of course, I found out that the Mizell brothers were reviving The Moments and some write-up concerning it, whom were part of the original Moments team for writing.
Yeah, I think they don't even... They said in the write-up that they didn't even remember who the group members were, so they... That record by The Leaders, it came out, and did you guys stay together as The Leaders for a little bit, or what happened with the group?
We stayed together as The Leaders for as long as we could, hoping that something would happen. And then, you know, as time goes by, you get tired, and you want to do something. I would sing rather with a group or without a group. And so time went on, and as it permitted, and I just started writing my own stuff. I got together with this guy, Clifford Dow, and we started doing tunes. We went to Atlanta, 2560 Studio, and recorded an album. Solo album is titled Love Is More Than Spoken.
When was that done?
That was in 1979,
okay,
80...
And before that, you actually recorded a whole album, too, right?
Right. That was with the... I got together with these guys who called themselves The Exceptions. They did some backup work for Eddie Kendricks. I saw them on TV.
Okay.
And... I'm sorry.
Please continue.
Yeah. And so I saw them on this local TV show. You know, Eddie Kendricks was singing solo just as he broke away, and these guys were singing backup. They were pretty good, you know, in what they were doing. I said, gee whiz. And I met them, and actually they found me and said, listen, man, you know, we need a first tenor. It was four of them, but they weren't really satisfied. Now, Harmony was pretty cool. I started doing arrangements for their harmony and putting things together, tightening things up, giving them a new sound. We got a deal with a guy at the studio, Jose Williams.
And he was like a legendary D.C. area engineer, right?
Exactly.
I think he even worked at Edgewood Studios where that first Moments record was recorded.
Exactly. But he had another guy with him. His name was James Purdy, who was the drummer.
Purdy,
yeah.
Yeah.
James Purdy was a great guy. He went blind, but he could do a lot of things musically. He was a piano, he played drums sometimes, but he had connection with the Airmen of Note, the Air Force Band. And come to find out, they were using those guys for a while, you know, Dave Steinmeier and the other guy who blew trumpet, what is his name? You probably see it on there. If you have the album in front of you, I do have it.
I think around the same time, James Purdy produced as Skip Mahoney and the Casuals.
Exactly.
And do you know if the same people played on both things, your album and that album, or you don't?
I think so. And the violinist there was also a part of that team. Fine violinist. She was. I don't have the copy in front of me. Do you have it?
No, I just bought the CD today. but I have the track you sent me. I wanted to play it.
I do have it in front of me. The violinist, I have to mention his name because he's a hell of a violinist. Here it is. I have it here. Von Nork was trumpet, and Kenny Smuckel trumpet, and David Steinmeier, trombone. And we had Alvin Alexandro on guitar, and Ira Watson on bass, and James Purdy on piano and drums, and Eddie Drennan was the violinist.
Okay. And he produced a lot of stuff, too.
You know him.
Well, he recorded as like Collage and Eddie, but he had a bunch of disco records, but he produced a bunch of soul records earlier too.
Right, he's teaching down here now, one of the top colleges here in Georgetown.
Okay, I want to play this record, and so pretty much what we were saying was that this record was recorded in 1976 with Jose Williams. And with the three guys that you said were previously the exceptions, but it was never released. Is that right?
Exactly.
So let me play the record and we could talk a little bit more about it. This is one track off of the album. This is called We're in Love.
Oh, yes.
Okay, that was just a record from the unreleased album that Mark Green cut in 1976 with members of a group called The Exceptions, and that was called We're in Love. So first of all, do you remember the other guys singing on the record, what their names were?
With the We're in Love?
Yeah.
That was Lauren Brown, Solomon Cunningham, and... Hewitt Cunningham, which is his brother, half-brother, and myself.
Okay, so there were four guys on the record. And did you guys have like a new group name, or you were going to release it as Mark Green?
At that time, was called The Exceptions, and we did a 21-state tour, which went quite well. Military, Midwest, etc.
Okay.
And we had we came back to and looked forward to releasing this album, but we were sort of stuck because Jose Williams had the album and didn't know that he was selling the company, and then he had a stroke, and talked to him and he couldn't find it, masters. So I had a cassette and I said, okay, this is the Marvin Day, we can turn it over and into a CD, you know.
So you,
it was digital.
So you recently released it as an album.
Yeah, in 1976, we didn't release it. So recently, in the millennium, we released it, and it's only been within this past year. It's on CDBaby.com.
Okay, so the album, what's it called? It's called Urban Legacy, is that right?
Urban Legacy, exactly.
And all the tracks were recorded in 76, and they're all pretty great. There's ballads and up-tempo ones like the one I just played.
Right, right. And we did some, well, comedy is one of my specialties, and that's what I pretty much did on that piece there. I did a lot of vocal arrangements for that group.
Yeah, definitely. The stuff I heard sounds great, so people should look out for that. And hopefully you'll get more distribution, too.
I appreciate that. You know, they can go on CDBaby.com, or they can go to DCJazz.com.
And you did more stuff. You were talking before about how in 79 you got involved.
In 79, yes. In 1979, I was working with another company, and we did some recording out in Bed Hill, Atlanta, and came up with a nice amount of tunes, and we did this album. Actually, funny thing about it, they were kind of dragging their feet with releasing this album. So I recorded and wrote a song called Afraid of Falling in Love Again and released it myself. And then I caught up with the guy, you know, we met again. He said, listen, man, why don't we just put it all together? He said, you handle it. I said, well, fine. And it became Love is More Than Spoken. That's the single album I got there, which is, I don't think you have that. I'm going to see if I can get that.
But that's also online at that same website. But did you ever release it in 79, or it's more stuff you recorded that was unreleased?
There was more stuff I recorded that was unreleased. Actually, we went out to California. When did we record at, I'm thinking of in California where they had the riots at. Compton.
Okay.
And we re-recorded Not on the Outside and a few other tunes. Then came back here and I recorded some other things, put another album together. That's, it became Unspoken Moments because I, right on top of that, actually that's a millennium release too, because Unspoken Moments is only about a year or so old, if that. And I got, Lionel Richie's, cover song there from Lionel Richie, Hello, on there, which is one of the most interesting things that I recorded. And we did I'm on the Outside Looking In, Little Anthony and the Imperials, and we did, let's see, that's on, I think it's on the same album. And we did Ooh Baby Baby from Bill Smokey Robinson. I redid that, too.
So you're saying you have a bunch of albums available, and some of the material, we already played one where all the material was from 76. Some of the other material was recorded in 79.
Right.
And then a lot of the material, when was the rest of the material recorded?
And I recorded two jazz albums, Tribute to Johnny Hartman and the Mark Green Project. Right within, I think it was 85, 83, 84, 85, I'm sorry, 2003.
Okay.
And right at the top of the millennium, I did the Mark Green Project. Also did an album called The Love We Save. It was more of abstinence and message music for the kids and et cetera within that album, titled The Love We Save. And then along with the releases for this last year and this year, Urban Legacy, and I've got one that's coming out soon, as a matter of fact, that has some interesting stuff on it. But it's several albums online now on CD Baby.
So I wanted to play a track off of an album you did called The Revealing Moments.
Exactly.
When did this one come out?
That came out this year.
Okay. So the two tracks you sent me off of it are nice. One of them is a remake of The Not on the Outside.
Right. So, that in California.
So you recorded it about a year ago?
We recorded that actually of two more than a year ago. But the release was a year ago.
Okay. Did you
release it? And so
did you record it in the 90s, maybe? Was it recorded in the 90s?
It was recorded in the 90s, actually.
Okay.
In the late 90s.
Okay, well, let me play it, and we could talk some more. This is Mark Green off of the Revealing Moments record, and this is his remake of Not on the Outside.
Near me. I'll call you.
Okay, that was just Mark Green with the remake of his own record called Not on the Outside, and that was released on an album called Revealing Moments, which I think just got released around the last year. Is that right?
Yes, it's not fully released, but now it will be, it should be coming in on CDBaby.com this week.
Okay, so I'll be looking for that. And one thing I meant to ask you about is, didn't you end up being Harry Ray's replacement for a second in the Moments again?
Exactly.
When did that happen? What happened with that?
I think Harry Ray, after passing, from 95?
Okay.
I think it was around that time. And the group was at, Ray Goodman and Brown were at a theater or a big showcase down here in Washington, and with several other groups. Can't think of the name of the place. It almost came out. It'll come up. But nevertheless, they were there, and I went backstage at Convention Hall. What is it? The Constitution Hall. That's where they were.
Is that in D.C.?
In D.C., in Northwest Washington, yeah. Very big place and popular for having big shows. And I met him back there, backstage, and we talked for a while. And lo and behold, he said, "Hey, listen, man, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm doing a lot of things." I said, "I know your lead singer is gone." He said, "Yeah." So we talked a little bit, and he said, "Well, look, you know, why don't you, you know, join us? And while you're not doing anything, great." Well,
so were they just doing a show with just Goodman and Brown, just two guys?
Just Goodman and Brown, yeah.
They
had another guy, too.
Oh, okay, so they brought in a third guy for the show.
They brought in a third guy, yeah. And so I flew up to Jersey, and actually, yeah, I did fly. No, I took a train up to Jersey. We rehearsed for a while. We took a flight out to, Goldsboro, Greensboro. Anyway, it was in North Carolina. Flew there and did a couple of shows and then drove from there to Atlanta. And did a show with Millie Jackson. You familiar with her?
Yes.
She's a riot. And the pay wasn't right. I said, "Okay, I'll rather have your friendship."
Okay.
And that was the end of that. That was like within maybe a week or two together. And so I moved on. And by the 79, 80s, I was still working as a solo artist, and then in 91, 92, I released a single. It's titled "I'm Afraid of Falling in Love Again," and then the other thing that I had done in California, in Compton, about 9 or 10 pieces, and so which included "Love Is More Than Spoken," which is the title cut on that album, the single that I did. We worked in, we got it together out there in Atlanta, at Ben Hill, where someone by the name of Jermaine Jackson, is that a familiar name?
Yeah.
And he played guitar on that session, and another girl by the name of Ann G. She was a great singer, beautiful girl, and she wrote stuff. And there was one guy from a group that was a drummer, Eddie Irons, that was his name, from a group called Brick.
Okay.
Ring a bell?
Yeah.
And so we recorded, and that music came from that end. Lo and behold, we fortunately, I got it out on the market, and we didn't get the expected play that we wanted, you know.
Well, today it's very hard to get radio play off of an independent record, because the industry is much more sort of centrally controlled by a few companies right now. So it's not like the 60s, even, where a tiny record label could get a break and get play anymore.
Exactly. Well, the world of payola still exists somewhere in the world.
It's just sort of more official now.
Official?
like you don't...
I like the term, official. Official, That's interesting.
So there's a bunch of CDs available, and you said you recorded a bunch of jazz CDs too?
I did a collection of standards, you know, from the Mark Green Project, Who Can I Turn To, Sunny Gets Blue, Our Love Is Here to Stay, with the backup singers on, you know, the moment sing jazz and that. Then with the Roberta Flack's husband there, ex-husband, I should say, the bassist, Steve Novosel, and Larry Innett, the retired dermatologist, was playing piano on that. He and on one song, Louis Scheer was playing My One and Only Love, and the late drummer, Mike Smith, fine drummer, was also playing. And the sax player is Charlie Young, who's from the, what is that, the military group. There's the Airmen and then there's another, the Commodores.
Okay.
And that's another military band. He was also with the Ellington group, too. Fine musician. I mean, he's playing... He's really overdue for getting his propers, and that's on the Tribute to Johnny Hartman CD. Then I recorded some things for the kids there, Teach Love, well, from the CD, The Love We Save, and there's a lot of message stuff that's in there.
So you have a lot of material available in different genres?
Yeah, cdbaby.com, and it's on dcjazz.com. And you can go to my site, themomentsfeaturingmarkgreen.com.
And there's a photo of you actually with the original three other members.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The original Moments. As soon as you open it up, you'll see me number three there.
And
standing in front of the Apollo Theater.
So thanks so much for...
Before you go, I want to say one other thing. There is a second group out there, the Moments, that are fraudulent. Actually, it's part of the Goodman and Brown group that I found out. I mean, they got their own name, and Ray Goodman and Brown use it. You know, I own the name of the Moments. That's the other side of it, and they don't want to respect that. And the same thing happened with the Temptations. You know, Otis, he had to reprimand two of the ex-members of the Temptations. But everything comes in time. My attorney is taking care of stuff, but... The original Moments, I own that group name, trademark, and I have, there's one other member that's still alive, Richard, and two other guys that sing. So
you still perform as the original Moments, you're saying?
As the original Moments, yes.
Okay, well, people should look out for that group, too, if they come to your town.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're looking out for it, too.
So, thanks so much for
Bob,
being on the phone.
Oh, Bob, I can't thank you, man, enough.
So, do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Well, I'm grateful that I'm able to come on this show, Bob. And I know you got a lot of listeners that are all across the country and all across the world. This is a worldwide situation here, isn't it?
Yeah, with the internet now, anyone can listen anywhere.
Absolutely. And if they want to book this group, they can also go to the site, themomentsfeaturingmarkgreen.com, or call the office at 202-789-5454. And we are available for performance. And that goes out to all of the venues that are available. We'd love to come and sing for you and... give you some rhythms, jazz, pop, or R&B.
Okay, well, definitely I hope to see you guys perform soon. So thanks so much for coming down.
Thank you, too, as well, and hope to talk to you soon.
You too. So this last record that I'm going to play is off of the Urban Legacy album that we were talking about earlier that was actually recorded in 1976.
Exactly, The Sun Don't Shine.
Here it is.
You've been thrown away. This pain I guess it's here to stay.
I'll never forget
the first day we met.